This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 287, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy listeners like you. Another edition of the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast. In fact, it's episode 287, which is not the code for murder. That's 187.
It's true.
My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi.
And Josh Flanagan.
What's up?
I wonder what the 287 code is. If you're a cop, let us know.
Broken glass.
Oh, okay. We are from the website iFanboy.com, which is all about the enjoyment and celebration of comic books and all the great things that come with comic books. And every week on Wednesday, we read a stack of comics. Sometimes, like this week, it's a very mighty stack. And then one of us has the responsibility of deeming the book that we believe that person believes is the pick of the week, the book they enjoyed the most that week. And then we come back here, talk about it, as well as the other books that came out, as well as any other topics of interest that we're interested in talking about, because it's our show and that's what we do. Dance.
We can do what we want.
Dance, monkey, dance. So before we get to the show, a quick reminder slash warning. This is a review show. We're going to be reviewing and talking about the books and what happened in them. So if you don't want that spoiled or ruined, press pause, come back, listen later after you've read your comic books. But from here on in, be warned, be careful. We are not responsible for ruining your enjoyment of your comic books. Only you are responsible for your enjoyment of your comic books.
Or Tony Daniel.
Snap. Wow. I haven't thought about that name in years.
It's doing Hawkman.
He is. All right. So this week, Connor had the pick. Connor?
Well, it's a good thing, A, it was a light week, and B, that nothing was going on in comics.
Yeah, I know. Ooh, it was like grasping at straws of things to talk about this week.
Right? Yeah, good thing I didn't have time to read my books on Wednesday. So the pick of the week was Criminal, The Last of the Innocent, number one, the newest Criminal miniseries. And it's been a year since the last one came out. And it's felt like longer because there's been, five miniseries of Criminal, I believe, since he started, since Brubaker and Sean Phillips.
This is the sixth one. They're five, yeah. Yep.
Their creator-owned Icon book from Marvel's Icon imprint. I loved the first three. The last two I didn't like as much. And so for me, the luster had gone off Criminal a bit. It used to be that it was my favorite book. I always listed it as my favorite book. You know, one of my top five, when we talked about the barbecue shows, we always listed our top five books. It used to be on there all the time. I didn't love the last two. And then we had a year break. So when this came back, I was less excited but more interested. But this issue, I thought, was fantastic, and it brought back all the love I had for the first three minis. It reminded me how much I love it, and it's almost an indefinable quality to it. It's hard to put your finger on what exactly makes one Criminal miniseries work over another. There's all these different elements to a Criminal story, and they have to work together in the right way. And I think this, the setting, the characters, the build-up, the fact that it's in 1982, it's in a small town. I found everything about this to be interesting.
This potentially might be, I think, has the potential to be my favorite of the criminal arcs, because this feels completely revigorated and like a different kind of energy than the previous ones.
Yes, exactly. You totally. And, I feel bad. Feel it.
And it was from the, you know, and I read your review and we've talked about it, and I enjoyed Bad Night. I did enjoy the, you know, I kind of see what you're saying about The Sinners, but Bad Night I did enjoy. But the moment I saw the cover for this one, I, like when, a couple of weeks ago when they released the cover, and I was like, this one's going to be one that knows. And this one like was so inventive and like, I mean, it totally blew me away. Totally blew me away.
Well, the criminal series, I guess if you want to call it, is about, you know, lowlifes, criminals, people who do bad things. And this particular issue is set in 1982, and there's a guy living in the city, and he's sort of a low-level criminal, and he's got gambling problems. He owes these guys money, and they're going to break his legs. But he's got to go home to his hometown because his father's dying. And it's like one of those idyllic little Rockwell-esque towns that looks like it's still 1960. There's cheerleaders in a wood panel car. You know, and everything looks all nice, and he's got a wife who's rich. She's the daughter of the town rich guy, and she's cheating on him and with her old friend from growing up, and he's got a girl next door that he used to love, and there's a best friend who's a junkie. So you start to peel away the layers of this idyllic town, and you find lots of dirty stuff underneath, and then it basically ends with he's got to get out from under his life that he hates, and it ends with the last line of the book is, I got to kill my wife, and.
Which seems like a stretch.
A little bit.
I was like, well, you could just get a divorce.
Or... you just leave
No,
her.
I think there's, I mean, you've got a...
He needs the money.
No, I know.
Father-in-law, and he owes people money, and he's got to kill his wife. Yeah. And you can tell she's kind of the stereotypical rich bitch kind of ice cold wife. And I don't know that he's going to get any money in that divorce. So
yeah, no, I know.
So I just loved everything about this from the characters. I thought the device of showing the flashbacks in sort of an old school children's art style, but it was all involving drugs and sex and things that you wouldn't have seen in those old books.
The title
of the book, which takes it to Wortham directly, was something I like a lot.
Yeah, well, The Last of the Innocent, and using the flashback, you know, like the childlike or more, you know, like early comics kind of style cartooning. Was just great. I feel like I read this device in another book somewhere, and I can't remember. We were talking about it in the shop. Like I want to say Dan Klaus, but I don't think so. But a similar kind of thing where taking that very Archie Lil Abner kind of style of art and putting like just nasty shit happening during it. And I
feel like I've seen it too. But
yeah, I can't remember where I saw it, but it worked great here. I love the flashback of his wife at prom night. Mm-hmm. That one was great. That was my favorite of them all. Like, I want that page, actually. Like, that was just awesome. And to see Sean Phillips change in range and change his style and draw on this kind of, you know, more, you know, kind of, you know, simple kind of cartooning kind of style was a blast. And this, like I said, this book had so much energy and such a different feel than any of the criminal books. Like, this I feel like this one could be the best one of the bunch so far. So,
Josh, you're a big fan. What did you think of this?
Well, this is the point in the show when I say something that sounds like it's not going to come from me, but perhaps Ron. I love this paper. Mm. This is great paper.
Yeah, it's good paper.
It's really good. It's not glossy. It's like a nice weight to it. The color looks fantastic. I liked it. I liked that it was. I'm not like 100% sold on it yet, but I never am at first. I have to sort of get into something before I make that call. But I like that it changed up the sort of background, because every other one has been in the filthy, grimy city.
Yeah.
And this is just a different way to look at it. So I enjoy the fact that I didn't really know what it was through most of it. It was enough to keep going. And by the time when they were using the flashback devices, it reminded me of I think it was Bad Night was the one that where the guy was a cartoonist.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It reminded me of that. And I was like, wait, are we still doing that? And then I realized that we weren't, and that's fine. You know, it does. I love Sean Phillips. You know, he's absolutely one of my favorites, and he, you know, Incognito is not my favorite thing, and the other stuff that he tends to do is not my favorite thing either. So this is like a really good way to sort of get. It just reminds me of when we get to Sleeper. You know, like I'm just like, oh, it's so good looking, and when Brubaker and Phillips work well together, and they really hit it. Yeah. It's just something very right about it. And so I got that feeling as I was going through this. And I want to know what's happening next. I was really – is it Freak Out? Is that the dude's name?
Mm-hmm.
Freak Out. Like, he's interesting to me. I feel like all these seeds were laid. I feel like something's going to happen with him that we don't expect. And then something's going to happen with that guy, Brock, who's the cop who used to be the bully. You know, that's all.
He was the moose.
Yeah. I love the sequence where he's well. First off, he falls asleep on the couch reading his old comics, and it's all the old pre-Wortham, you know, crime yeah, never see, pays. You see stuff, and then he goes into this dream, and great mixing of Philip style drawing the main character in his style, but in the kind of simple pre-Golden Age kind of cartooning style, like the where he's reaching out to touch himself. I thought that was great. That was really cool. Mm-hmm. Did freak me out a little.
Not in a sexy way. Anyway.
Not in a sexy
no,
way.
No, not.
Did freak me out a little on the second page when we found out the character's last name was Richards. I was just like, oh,
which is
no.
The best. It's the best name to yell angrily. It is. You really got something there that a lot of people don't know. So,
normally I don't. I'm not one for the back matter. The back matter essays. I love the Encyclopedia Brown books as a kid.
I don't ever read these essays, but I saw Encyclopedia Brown and I was like, got it. This.
Yeah, Brubaker had me at Encyclopedia Brown. So
you should do an Encyclopedia Brown comic.
I'm really excited for this. I mean, how many issues is this? Five or six, or do we know?
Whatever the standard length is, five.
Usually five.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I hope they do more. I've heard rumors this might be the last one. I know they don't do very well, but any criminals is good. No, I'm happy it's back. And it's funny because as we talked earlier, I had a huge stack, and I read this first, and after every book I finished, I was like, not as good as Criminal.
Yeah,
it was Criminal, and I got to the end, and I was good at Criminal, and that was, it was clearly the best, and as I said in the review, the most relatable. I mean, these people are all pretty bad, but they were the most human.
Yep.
And and not to say the superheroes aren't relatable, but it was the one that drew me in the most, and I cared about the characters the most, and cared about what was going to happen next the most.
Yeah.
It was clear. It wasn't even an issue when I finished my stack. What was going to be the pick of the week? Yeah. Criminal, The Last of the Innocent, number one. If you've never read a Criminal, you can pick this up. You don't need to have read any other series. They're all standalone miniseries. There's a couple of them that are linked vaguely, but you can read them all alone. But I can't recommend Criminal, The Last of the Innocent, number one enough.
Cool.
I like when we talk about Fear Itself because I don't know where it's going to go. I didn't check your ratings, and I honestly couldn't tell you.
This was huge because we had Fear Itself and we had Flashpoint.
I know. It was like Battle of the Network events. Well, first off, I mean, the first comment right out of the gate is I'll be the annoying comic fan.
All right.
So I guess Bucky's not in Russian prison anymore, huh?
Well, if he does, they're not going to take good care of him. and he needs it.
Oh, man.
I think we can get it out of the way early enough. Stuart Eminem is fantastic.
Oh, he's the saving grace of the series.
No one has any complaints about him. Yeah,
I am at this point. I've decided when I finish this. And you know, it's funny because I compare this issue to Transformers 2. At the end of it, I thought, okay, that was all right.
Yeah.
And then I gave it any kind of modicum of thought, and it started to get worse and worse and worse. And then it got so bad that I went back to iFanboy and changed my rating.
Wow.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You mean you had to unpull it, then repull it?
Yeah. I thought this was pretty bad, and to me, it's a wasted opportunity because I think Siege worked so well because it was focused.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We had one story. That, you know, of course, there's always a B or a C story, but we had basically one story. There was a fight at Asgard. This is all over the place. You don't stay with anyone.
Yep.
You don't stay with anyone long enough to care.
Yep.
You know, the whole spoiler alert. The whole crux of this issue is that Bucky dies. Bucky Cap. But we see him for like two.
He died. Did he die or he's just fucked up?
He's got a hole the size of a Buick in his chest.
He's just fucked up. I think. I don't think he's dead.
I think he's real fucked. Look at the beginning coming in.
There's no emotional weight.
I see it.
He's dead. Or for now.
There's no emotional weight to his death because we barely have spent any time with him.
Right. Well. So much more so because it's not clear that he's dead.
He's dead.
Well, that's
I don't think it's clear that he's dead. It's not
that's
comic book death.
Every comic book death. You don't know exactly because the last page is like, and they don't show you. I think, Connor, you nailed it. I saw somebody comment on the site, and I tended to agree with it, was that it's just it doesn't seem like there's anything wrong with it. It's just going through a bunch of motions.
Yep.
Like it's hitting all the points that it's supposed to, and it seems to have all the check marks of this kind of thing, but it's the same thing we've seen for the most part. I mean, it's remarkably similar to the ring thing. I mean, it really is. It's just all these hammers and it's changing what they can do and sort of what it's about. There's a different background behind it. It's just off a little bit. Like the characterizations just feel off a little bit. It's just not quite there. And I, I don't know. I can't. I feel like I want to like it.
Well,
like
I don't think there's a problem with the characterizations. Like, I didn't have a problem. Like, I'm like, oh, that's not Steve, or that's not, you know, or whatever.
I had a problem. There was a line of dialogue.
The problem is
Loki said screw something, and I was like, that sounds wrong.
But I didn't run into that problem. But the problem is exactly what Connor said, is that it, and maybe I didn't have that problem because it never lingered on a character more than two pages.
Yeah, well, it feels like the camera is shifting before you get a chance to really get a sense of where you are, and so you didn't take in what just happened before you moved on to the next thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's just so much to do. And you know, to be fair, I'm guessing, you know, the sort of mandate for something like this is like, keep it exciting, keep it the action, go with that. But I need something more, personally. Right. And they're, you know, in a way that you said you didn't spend enough time with Bucky Cap to care about it. Well, they are relying on the fact that you knew him before, so that has some sort of relevance.
It's like a character walking into the room and he gets shot.
Yeah,
it's sure it's shocking, but you need to have that journey to the getting shot to really get invested in it.
Yeah,
you need to see him fight this guy. We see him for two pages fighting, and at first I thought, "Ooh, this is going to be a good issue because there's some action going on." And then we skip to another scene. We're gone for so long, it doesn't really you don't have that through line in the story to get built up into it. So when he dies, it's a tragic moment.
And I know that we've changed Loki's around a bunch of time, but like Loki seemed weird to like, I don't like his Asgard dialogue. It's something's not right about it. But then, so they're about to have Thor escape, and then Odin shows up and then basically says, no, it's okay. Go take your hammer. Like, so there was no point in having him show up. It was just a gasp, but with no reason, because the story went exactly the same way it would have without him being there.
Yeah.
So far. I don't know. Stuart Eminem. I don't even want to just say Stuart Eminem because Wade Von Grawbadger. Oh, I got to say it.
Yeah.
And Laura Martin, like the whole thing together, and Chris Eliopoulos on, like, it's a great looking book.
Yeah.
You know, the production on it all the way through is really great.
Yeah.
That part.
So then moving on to Flashpoint number two, I tweeted this, but I had to say, between reading Fear Itself and Flashpoint, I've come to the conclusion that the comic industry hates Paris.
Yeah,
they hate that city. Stay away from the city.
Well, let's get the artist out of the way again. I thought, as opposed to the first issue, which was weirdly all over the place in terms of Andy Kubert, I thought this issue was very solidly Kubert.
Yeah,
it all looked like his style that we expect from him. There was no strange variations.
Agreed.
I thought, except for one or two panels, especially the one where Aquaman first shows up, that was kind of weird. But other than that, I thought it was very solid art-wise.
Yeah,
it was much better looking. Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, it was more consistent that way.
I was very happy to see that as I read through that.
Now, story-wise, on the other hand, unfortunately,
I can't make my mind up.
Yeah,
I want to like it a little bit, but some of it I don't. And the one thing that got me is that, so there's this scene in the beginning that was very compelling. Of Batman basically beating up Barry as Barry tries to explain everything, and then Batman turns on a dime for reasons I don't understand.
Well, he finds out that Bruce is alive and is, you know, like, it's the Bruce thing that gets him.
Yeah, but why is, I guess, but it happened after that. It was just an odd moment. Then he's like, wait, tell me more.
Yeah. Okay. I totally agree. Totally agree.
And you know, if we're talking about a new paradigm here, we haven't reached that. I don't know why, but this is, you know, so far this is story is Barry trying to figure out how to get his world back. So it's going to be a weird turn.
Now the one thing is the Wonder Woman Steve Trevor scene I thought was all right. I mean, it introduced Wonder Woman, introduced that world, it introduced what was going on in that thing. I didn't have a real problem with that. I will give Geoff Johns credit that when it moved over to the Barry Allen trying to recreate the lightning, the lightning thing, I didn't see that happening.
wanted it to be like if he would die there.
I know.
Like, oh, look at that.
To see, I know. Like, I turn,
good. All right.
Like,
well,
the lightning strikes, the chemical goes off, he screams, and then you turn the page and it's a charred Barry Allen. I was like, yes. So I'll give him that much credit in that where Fraction hasn't surprised me for itself, that kept me guessing.
Yeah.
I also liked Pirate Deathstroke. I like the concepts a lot, and I think there are some storytelling problems just in this, similarly to Fear Itself, as well, there's a lot to cover in this in this one issue that it's hard to latch onto things, but I like the ideas and I like the characters a lot. So that's the one difference I have. And it also, it ties into, we had four Fear Itself books that came out in addition to this book. And so I like the entire world
four Flashpoint books to come out as
well. That's what I'm saying. Four Flashpoint books are.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Flashpoint Fear Itself, they both start with F.
Oh, it's so weird how that – it's like the movies when there's all the meteor movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very bizarre.
But, so I like when, in conjunction with everything, I really enjoy this world. that they're building. Now, they haven't really hooked, given you the really the emotional hook yet of the story, other than Barry wanting to get home. But as a whole, as a world, as an Elseworld, I'm enjoying this reality. I mean, especially when you like Batman: Night of Vengeance was awesome.
Well, we're gonna get into the tie-in books, but before we do that, so Flashpoint number two better than number one? How do we feel about it? Like than number one? Okay, yeah,
yes,
I'm in agreement, but not by much. That's my point. So
I was a little more into great cover, by the way. Yeah. In the electric chair. That was fantastic.
So now the four tie-in books launched, and I said, you know, I'm gonna try them all. Mm-hmm. And I picked up all four.
I got them as well.
You got the Josh. Did you get any of them? Or
I bought Batman.
Okay, so let's start with Batman then, I guess, right? So Batman, I totally agree with you, Connor. Eduardo Risso, awesome.
No one can ever complain about him.
Yeah. Every time I open these books, I open up to the middle Tommy Lee Edwards Super 8 comic, and I'm just like, why?
somebody made the comparison on Twitter. This was like Batman via Scalped. And it kind of was.
Yeah,
it's a little bit of Dark Knight Returns Batman. That's what I kept thinking because he's old.
Yeah, you see, finally, like that's the thing we brought up in. I think we talked about it on the podcast, or I might have talked about it in a night out. But like in this world, like he's got to be old
because
Thomas Wayne's got to be old. Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad to see that carry through in this book. I did cringe a little when I saw the Joker at the end.
That doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I don't know the movie.
I mean, you have to see him.
You can't really mean he's in shadow mostly.
No, but it's the Heath Ledger Joker.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
it's like every Marvel character becomes looking like their movie character.
Yeah, well, we're gonna get to that in Abin Sur in a moment. But yeah, but I thought the star of this for me was Eduardo Risso. I mean, even the story was even good too. But this was just like, oh man, I forgot how good he is.
It was, you know, like with Brian Azzarello, especially writing. You know, Brian Azzarello in general, actually, I'm not even going to specify. He can you get a different one every time.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes tone is always. He doesn't have a problem with tone or dialogue. He's always very good with that. But sometimes the story is real hard to pick out.
Yeah,
and I think in this one, he was definitely on it. But you know, he's done Batman a lot of times. He knows Batman. He's got that.
Well, remember the Wednesday Comics Batman was all, that him and Risa did was great. Yeah, so I am going to keep buying the series.
It's good. It's only three issues.
That's what I'm doing. I tried all these, and this week I'm deciding which ones I'm going to keep, which ones I'm not going to keep. So I'm going to keep Batman, surprisingly.
Which one would you like to talk about next?
Let's talk about Abin Sur. Josh, did you get Abin Sur?
No, I just bought Batman.
You just bought Batman. Okay, so.
A couple of things about this one. First, it's funny. They're basically doing Blackest Night in one three-issue miniseries.
Well, the main thing I took away from this is that not a whole lot has changed in the Green Lantern world in the Flashpoint universe. Yeah, well. Other than the timeline.
Well, if you think about what is the Flashpoint universe? It is the Reverse Flash has gone back in time and changed things.
Yeah.
Sure, that affects Earth, but would that really affect the rest of the cosmos?
Right, no, not at all. Yeah. So in this Abin Sur exists, Sinestro is still a Green Lantern and they're in the middle of Blackest Night basically, and both Abin Sur and Sinestro look a whole lot like the movie counterparts. Just noting it. That's all. I'm not complaining. Yeah, I'm just noting it.
I actually really like the art.
I really like the art too.
Yeah, I thought it was a really nice looking book.
Yeah.
Was it?
These both guys I never heard of. The artist was Felipe Massafera.
Yep. And it was written by Adam Schlagman, who I believe used to be an editor. I think.
Really.
Whenever there's
art.
A guy that you've never heard of, he's always Felipe.
Yeah. No, I thought the art was strong, and it's Green Lantern. I mean, it's classic. It's green. It was familiar enough that Atrocitus is in it, and he's a Red Lantern. You know, like it all kind of. It wasn't that far off of the Green Lantern world.
And I actually enjoyed this Green Lantern story more than I've enjoyed Green Lantern in the book since Blackest Night ended. So for me, this was a really fun ride because I was like, oh, Green Lantern, fun again.
You know why?
Why?
Because there's only like two or three people in it.
Yeah, that's true.
So
it was Sinestro and it was Abin Sur. So that was really – I really liked this, so I'm going to keep with that too.
I'm going to keep with Abin Sur as well.
All right.
So next.
Secret 7.
Secret 7, Peter Milligan, George Perez.
Yes, and also Fernando Blanco, I think, drew some of it.
Very unlike me, but I love this.
I'm curious as to why, because I had a hard time finishing it.
Oh, it was wacky. It was just crazy. It this feels like the most Vertigo book of this batch.
It was Shay the Changing Man in Flashpoint, and it was, I don't know. I think it was so wacky all over the place that I had a hard time really connecting to it.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I enjoyed it. One notable thing to note in here that looks like a monitor was in this.
It could be. It
looks like a monitor. It looks a whole lot like a monitor. I don't know. I just really I love the art. I thought the art was great. I mean,
well, it's Perez, but my problem, I think, was, and you said this is a very Vertigo-esque book.
Yeah.
I don't know if Perez is the right artist for this kind of story.
But that's why I think that's why I liked it. Because you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the old beginning of Vertigo, like 80s, early 90s Vertigo stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, it reminded me of the stuff that, you know, like, you know, Animal Man, Swamp Thing, like all, like the early kind of Vertigo days.
Which was DC.
Right. Exactly. So,
I'm on the fence about staying with it. I'm not sure yet.
I'm going to stay with it.
Okay.
And then
World of Flashpoint,
written by Rex Ogle and drawn by Eduardo Francisco. It's like we're reading like another industry. Like, who are these people? Like, who's Rex Ogle?
It just sounds like an Argentinian phone book.
Rex Ogle sounds made up, I'll be honest with you.
I like that name. Maybe it's Ogle.
This is Dr. 13.
Yeah.
It is. Dr. 13 and his daughter. That's who the characters are.
Oh, right. Yeah, you're right.
It's Dr. 13 and Stacy 13. And I liked this a lot.
You did?
I was surprised. I wasn't expecting to, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't love it as much. I liked this one the least, probably. I didn't think it was awful, but it didn't grab me as much. Rex Ogle was an editor as well. There you go. Yeah.
So. In this story, Dr. 13 is part of a cabal of world leaders, including a Nazi with a giant swastika.
Yep, I did enjoy that. So.
Who? No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. I mean, you know what I mean.
I want to specify.
Whose plan is to nuke the part of the world because they're going to nuke Europe basically because of the whole war between Aquaman and Wonder Woman going on in Europe, and it's causing trouble in the whole world. So they're going to drop some bombs on Europe, and his daughter's found out, she's going to try to stop them. So that's, I really enjoyed it. I did. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I can't really put my finger on why, but I did. I liked the character.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of Flashpoint,
but I didn't I didn't fall in love with that one, so I'm not going to stick with it. So,
but my point is, reading all these together as one, which is what I did, I really enjoyed this whole wide world that they've created.
Interesting. So it's an Elseworlds.
They've got
it. Is it an Elseworlds?
Well, it's like that. It's like the fun I have in an Elseworlds, which is to explore these new characters that are presented in a new way, or these old characters in a new way.
Yeah. Is it fun though? Because you know you can still go back to the other one.
What do you mean?
See, that's something that, you know, this is
what's the question? The question.
This is it now. This is not Elseworlds.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
This is Worlds.
Well, could be. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen.
I don't know.
We know at the end of this we're not – well, we don't know. But basically, I'm enjoying it, and there's really no qualification on why. This is the story. I don't like it.
Yeah. All right, cool.
That's a lot of event books.
So shake off the Flashpoint, shake off the event books. Let's get back to some normal comics, some comics that matter. Now, first issue of a series that I've been waiting for a while, 50 Girls 50, number one from Image. Written by Frank Cho and Doug Murray, with art by Axel Medellin.
Doug Murray of the NOM.
Yes, Doug Murray of the NOM, yeah.
Nice.
Now, I'm going to make a comparison, and by no means am I saying this is on the same level as it, but scratching a similar itch that Fear Agent has scratched for us over the years, 50 Girls 50 is totally scratching that sci-fi genre romp kind of epic, but instead of drunk Keith Houston, you've got a bunch of women trying to get home from Earth in spaceships.
That's the plot?
That's the plot, yeah.
Now, I flipped through it. I decided not to get it because it is like that on the surface, but it didn't seem like it had that edge.
It did lack a little of that. Like, remember, I always go back to that moment at Heroes Con when I read the first Fear Agent trade, and I was like, this is fucking great.
I read a few pages and I didn't get that. Yeah, I was like,
hey. I'll totally upfront and honest that it does lack that. But I mean, it ranged from space to kind of savage jungle kind of location. It's hitting all those notes, and you know, on a 5-star scale, it was a solid 3.5 or 4. Like, it was fun. And it's only a 4-issue miniseries, and you know, with Frank Cho, there's going to be lots of women and that sort of thing.
He's not drawing it.
No, but he's writing it. And just because he likes to draw women doesn't mean he doesn't like to write women. So,
right. But I'm saying it's like Tony Daniel.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Frank Cho's a bad writer. I'm just saying I like Frank Cho for his art.
Yeah, true. But I don't know. I enjoyed it. It was fun, but by no means is it like, oh my God, this is the best comic book ever. But it was a fun little romp for a 4-issue miniseries. It's cool. Something a little different. And like, the thing is like, you know, now that Nova's gone, now, you know, like I find myself itching for a little sci-fi fun, you know, like spaceships. I mean, it's basically the Lost in Space kind of, you know, like they're in spaceships trying to get home. That's the story. So simple.
I'm enjoying the heck out of Moon Knight still.
Moon Knight 2 was awesome.
When he, I just love the crazy.
When he the crazy is fantastic. So like this issue. So I got to give some credit. So the issue opens up with Moon Knight and Spider-Man and Wolverine and Captain America in front of like a bad guy hideout and them debating what they should do. That whole conversation was great, but that was just typical Bendis. And turns out it's a strip club and a woman is lecturing the strippers that they're there to get information and that's what their jobs are and you know and them they'll get paid for the more information they get. I thought that was a great premise. And then when quote-unquote Spider-Man walked into the strip club and I realized it's not Spider-Man, it's Moon Knight in a makeshift Spider-Man costume, I laughed.
Yeah, I like that part. The whole conversation in the beginning was which hero was going to go in.
Yep.
So you got to figure if he had chosen Captain America in his head, he would have walked in a Halloween Captain America Halloween costume.
Exactly.
And it was just very funny. I have a dream to dance.
It was very, very funny. And he's got these gauntlets that look like web shooters. But then when the heroes decide that Spider-Man's not getting the job done, and Cap says Wolverine go in, he pops the claws. It was great. I mean, like it's a new dimension to the whole multiple personality thing that is really, really entertaining. And I thought Maliv's art was better than the first one. I thought, in fact,
this is the Maliv I prefer to the other Maliv.
Exactly.
It's still not as good as the old Daredevil Maliv, but this is much better than.
And I meant to email the iFanboy staff because we were talking about this last week, but the resurgence of Echo.
The big twist is that Echo was undercover in the club. And now he blew her whole operation, so now they're kind of teamed up.
What happened to her?
And for some, well, she's been undercover.
She was off stripping.
Was she Ronin?
Yeah,
she was Ronin.
She was Ronin.
She was on the Avengers.
Yeah. She even says it. She's like, I was an Avenger for all 44 seconds.
And then, but what happened? Like, Clint showed up, and she was like, "Here's the suit."
What happened was that when Dark Reign started, they went back to New York. The last moment Echo was seen was Danny Rand saying, "Come back to, we're going back to Bucky's apartment," and she didn't go. And that was the last moment anybody saw her. So,
did Clint sleep with her?
I'm sure.
Probably. Did Mark Spector sleep with her? Like, why is she in her underwear in this scene?
Because they're in bed.
Did they do it?
No, he was asleep. He got knocked out.
Okay. Yeah.
A lot of sleep, I guess. Unconscious is a better word.
Just look good, though. Looking good, Echo. All right, looking good.
Right. Life model.
So Uncanny X-Force number 11. I'm just going to, I mean, it's a monthly gush about what Remender's
doing. Well, it's a bi-weekly gush.
A bi-weekly gush about what Remender's doing this. He made going back to Age of Apocalypse completely plausible and completely awesome. And the secret MVP of this entire 11-issue run so far is absolutely Dean White. Because somehow Dean White and his color palette is being able to take Opeña, Ribic, Billy Tan, and now Mark Brooks. And
he didn't color the last Billy Tan issue. Justin Ponsor did.
But anyway, the color palette is what is uniting the look and feel of this. You know, and like Mark Brooks, I'm not a huge fan of. Like, I think he draws in that kind of way that I don't like. And while it teetered over in that direction a little bit more, again, like with Billy Tan, the story rose such above that I rode with it. And as an X-Men fan, this is like, I can't even describe how much fun this is. So
I never read Age of Apocalypse, but I enjoyed the story quite a bit.
You never read Age of Apocalypse?
No, I wasn't reading
X-Men
at that time.
You would totally love it, Connor. Totally. Like for the reason why you like Flashpoint?
Sure I would. That was the time when I wasn't reading X-Men. What I was thinking about when I was reading this book is it was really good. The story is really strong, and the art was fine. But I think when Opeña is not drawing it, it ceases to become an upper echelon book. And simply becomes a very good book.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Whereas when Opeña is drawing it, it's like a whole other thing happening.
Well, that's the difference between you versus me coming at it. Where for me, like this is like I'm going to read this no matter who's drawing it because these are my characters, this is my world, and that sort of thing. And but for you, like because you're not normally an X-Men reader or a not normal X-Men reader, Opeña is the push off the clip. You know what I mean? Like the art would be.
It's like Batman and Robin.
Yeah. Exactly. Like when I read Batman and Robin for Quietly. Yep.
Well, this is a great book, and I'm reading it despite the artists who I may not enjoy. What I'm saying is it's like what Quietly was drawing Batman and Robin. It was a crazy upper echelon book, whereas when he wasn't, it was a very good book.
Yeah, exactly.
This is almost the same thing. And Josh is right. This is like when Opeña's drawing it, it's like this is one of the best superhero books being made. When he's not, it's still lots of fun.
Yeah.
The thing is, I bought that 1-3 special issue, and I realize they're not going to come out with the 4-6. So I'm kind of stuck. I don't want to buy the trade. I already read the first half of it.
Yeah,
I gotta find back issues or something.
Have fun with
drunk?
That I know you got hitting the sauce. But anyway, it was great to revisit Age of Apocalypse in a scenario that matters.
Well, Josh, they've been coming out biweekly, so I probably have the last six in the stack on my desk. I can probably dig up for you.
They've been coming out like it seems like weekly.
It's been biweekly for at least.
Oh,
a month.
It's awesome! I love it. Months, it's great. It's fantastic.
I think we should really only be on like issue 7.
Yeah, I know. And we're on issue 11, which is awesome. Which is like, oh, yeah.
So Rick's okay with it too.
I'm sure he is. So Uncanny X-Force number 11. I loved it. It's an Age of Apocalypse. Oh, so much fun! I can't wait to see where it goes.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So real quickly, want to tell everybody about the world of digital comics and Graphically. iFanboy is a member of the Graphically family, and if you are into digital comics and if you've got a phone or an iPad or an Android device or your computer, you can read comics from Marvel, Top Cow, Boom, IDW, tons of more publishers. They got over 3,000, close to 4,000 comics up on the platform for you guys to read and check out. Like I said, available on the web, on your Android phone or tablet, iPhone, iPad, whatever you like, wherever you like to read comics, you can. And what's even better is that rolling out this week, in fact, keep an eye out on twitter.com/graphically for the announcement, but the new Graphically website is coming out, and it's going to be a whole new way to interact with comics online and read comics on the web. And we've seen it. We work there. We deep in the weeds with it, and it's a pretty big release, and I'm really excited about it. So if you haven't checked out Graphically yet, please do us a favor. It keeps us in business, keeps us rolling. So go to graphically.com, check it all out, and keep an eye out for the new website coming out later this week.
What are digital comics? Never heard
an
of
an essay
them.
By Connor Kilpatrick. I wanted to talk very briefly about Hellboy the Fury number 1.
Everyone's been raving about this.
You guys, well, here's the thing. This story's been going on since we were all in short
1990,
pants.
1990. Yeah. Something like
93,
that.
94, something like that.
I never wore short pants.
You wear them now.
I've seen you in them, my friend.
What are short pants?
Shorts.
Oh, mine go past my knee, though.
They're still shorter than pants, aren't they?
Sure, yeah. Okay, here we go.
It's not qualified.
We're not talking about capris here.
Okay,
We're not Gordon.
All right.
This story has been going on a really long time, and Hellboy literally wandered for a while.
I remember
this
that.
Is starting to feel like a conclusion is building.
You think he's going to die?
I think he has to.
Yeah.
Because the part of the prophecy, the thing that he's been avoiding the whole time, is that he is going to be the one who brings about the end of the world.
Right. And you think the world's going to die?
Well, it's either the world or him. I think he has to make a sacrifice. Like, and you know what's going to happen. It's like he's going to be looking at whatever the thing is, and he's going to realize that he has to go. And he's going to say,
Crap. Exactly.
He's going to say, oh, crap. But it was a great issue in a couple of different ways. There's sort of two settings, what Hellboy's doing and then what his new girlfriend is doing. And she's got Excalibur and the way that story went. And it was pretty damn good. Like it feels like third act. And I'd be really sad to see Hellboy end. And it's not, then they'd be telling you if it was coming up, but it really feels like we're reaching some sort of culmination. I think it needs to, it's been building towards something. You have to get there.
Now I'm reading this in library editions. Mm-hmm. What volume will this be?
It's good. 6 maybe.
No.
Seven?
I've got 3 here, and that's like...
I think 5 are solicited.
12. Ooh. This would be like way off in the future.
I just got the first one, because I was like, I never got it. After I made the BPRD book, the book of the month, I was like, I never got that library edition, so I went to go find it, and I realized it's out of print, so it's $180 everywhere. Mm. And so then I saw it at Midtown Comics, and I had that $20 off, so I bought it. But I just had the first one, which is
nice,
silly.
Right.
I'm going to be
that
behind.
That was also book of the month many years ago.
Yeah, I know. And hell yeah. Jonah Hex number 68. 68 issues of Jonah Hex, people. I can't come. If they cancel it tomorrow, what am I going to do? I'm
going to complain. I'll be fine. 68 is a lot of time.
What did you think? You added this to the list. I'm curious.
This was one of my favorite issues in a while.
Really?
It was basically a locked room mystery. And what I liked about it was these guys find a body in this town. They got to pin it on somebody. Otherwise, the town will get a reputation for violence, and they don't want that. So they decide that they're going to pin it on the stranger in town, and it's Jonah Hex. So they go to his hotel room, and they say, we're going to string you up for the murder. And he says no, of course. So he basically talks them out of killing him, talks them into hiring him to find the killer. And they say, will you find the killer? He says, no, you got to pay me. It's what I do for a living. And they say, okay, we'll pay you. And he turns around and shoots the guy and says, that's the killer. I just like the setup of this whole whole big build up, and then he just turns around and shoots the guy and says that.
That was the perfect moment. That was like, that's knowing your character. It was dead or alive, and they're like, either one, and then he shoots him. I didn't love the art in this one.
Like, very evocative. I thought it didn't work all the time, but I thought there was panels of it that worked really well.
Well, there was bits. It's very melty looking. Everybody looks like melting wax, and I think at times I just didn't know who I was looking at, and that was the only thing, because they were all locked in this tiny little room. The pages were very crowded. That would have been my complaint on it. But story-wise, that was very interesting.
Mm. Now, I'm starting to feel with Amazing Spider-Man the way I felt at the end of JMS's run, in which I didn't care anymore.
Yeah, it's really kind of going off the rails a little bit.
I found myself not at all caring what was happening in the book.
Yeah. This is it's tough. I kind of feel bad because it's, well, I mean, first off, you know, we have the return of Anti-Venom with some awful dialogue.
Yeah.
Like the fact, you know, the idea that Anti-Venom is out there, criminals beware, you're a disease and I'm the cure. I'm like, really? No.
Yeah.
No. Even Eddie Brock wouldn't talk like that. And then the big twist for longtime Spider-Man fans is that Wraith is Jean DeWolf.
Yeah, which I didn't like.
Right, yeah. So, you know, it's... It is what it is, you know. And then whether or not it actually is Jean DeWolf, who knows if it is? Like, because you know the idea towards the end, Carly points out Mysterio was planning something like this, and maybe it's not actually her. That's what. But like, yeah, I was just like, oh. And I know this is like leading up to Spider Island, which is supposed to be really big and really good, and I've heard good things about it. But Dan Slott's not making it easy on us, that's for sure. So
I really considering dropping. I'm not quite sure if I'm going to get the next one. There's a couple. I actually took an axe to the. I pulled this week and dropped a couple of long-time books. I might make this another one. I'm not sure.
Wow. Harsh really, times.
I'd be bummed out if I did because I loved
it's been
it
so
pre,
good. I know.
Pre-big time, I loved this book so much. And now I just don't find myself caring all that much.
So real quickly, Zombie Christmas Carol came out from Marvel, which I picked up on a whim. Well, partially Jim McCann wrote it. And I love the idea of a Christmas Carol and tying it in with zombies because it really is like a ghost. Like it's one of those things where, like, why didn't someone done this before? And it was fun. I mean, I'm a sucker for A Christmas Carol. I love that story. And this was very much true to Dickens and true to the Christmas Carol story, but amping up the zombies, which I thought was fun. Right? So, and the art, I actually really enjoyed the art.
I love really, it. That sort of Disney animated style.
Yeah.
With a little bit of tone to it.
Yeah, I really, really liked it. Yeah, the art was very animation-y, kind of I could see this flowing as an animated story as opposed to a comic. It was really wordy though, but I think that's mainly because of the source material.
he condensed Dickens. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it was fun. Yeah. So.
Cool.
And finally, who is Jake Ellis number four? Just continues to deliver. I I've heard rumblings that this book is going to be an ongoing, but the last page says it's, you know, next issue 5 of 5, which I don't think it actually is. But this, we get a little twist and we find out the main character finds the secret file of Jake Ellis. And it ends,
now you'll know who Jake Ellis is.
Yeah, exactly. And it ends with him staring, holding the file of Jake Ellis, staring at the Jake Ellis in his head. And then I was like, ah, don't end. Like, it was the perfect kind of cliffhanger kind of thing. Like, as the alarm is going off, cause they broke into this place. And I don't know. It was good. It was just, I love this book. This book is
the second series will be called That Guy. That's Jake Ellis.
Yeah.
But,
very, very straightforward.
Yeah, very globetrotting. They're in Morocco, like very globetrotting kind of.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the trade a lot.
Yeah.
You'll like it.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it. So
that's all the books that we have to talk about, but it's not just us who matter. Not at all. We thought we would take a look at the top 5 picks of the week from the community as of the time of recording. So it could change by the time you hear this. Number 5, Ron, you will go along with this. It's Uncanny X-Force number 11.
Woo-hoo!
With 4.4%. Number 4, Fear Itself number 3 with only 5.1%, which is fairly low for an event book at this point from Marvel. S.H.I.E.L.D. Volume 2 number 1, 6.8% at number 3. Number 2, Connor's pick, Criminal, The Last of the Innocent number 1 with 14.4%. And number 1, dominating, Flashpoint number 2, 47.6%.
Bunch of crazy people. Bunch of crazy people.
It was good. What did you guys pick, or did you guys have one? Or
I think I went with Uncanny X-Force.
I just finished my stack right before we started recording, so I haven't really thought about it yet.
Although S.H.I.E.L.D. was I really enjoyed S.H.I.E.L.D., and we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but I really did enjoy S.H.I.E.L.D. So.
Possibly Hellboy.
All right, well, let's get some user reviews. Let's when you go to iFanboy.com/comics, you can make your pull list. You can choose your picks of the week that and you get your books into the top five list. And also, you can write reviews. And you can also record video reviews, which you're doing a lot, but we can't read those on the show, so sorry.
That's really kind of interesting.
So Silver Age Tom reviewed the Hulk number 34 and gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5. And at the time of recording, 0% of the people made this their pick of the week. And here's Tom's entire review. He says, "I miss Gabe Hardman already. This issue seems to have come completely out of left field. Here we've been following the Red Hulk in a story very much based in a world of super science and political intrigue, and bringing the Skara world into this comic seems unneeded. The World War Hulk storyline works so well because it was a change of pace for the character when we needed it at the most. This is a storyline that, while not bad, is just superfluous and seems out of place in the current Hulk run." And this is – I dropped Hulk with this issue.
I almost didn't buy it because it wasn't Gabe, and I'm like, well, but I've been so pro Hulk and it's been so good, let me stick with it. And at the end of it, I'm like, oh, I wish I hadn't bought this. Not only is it not Gabe Hardman, but it literally, like you said, out of nowhere, and now it's in the whole Planet Hulk thing, which I didn't read, which I'm not saying was bad, but I don't have anything related to it. So it's like,
it was a combination of not being Hardman. Also, yeah. I don't care about that storyline.
Exactly.
Here's the thing, is that I like, I started reading it and I was all pissy. I was like, what is this? Because one thing that's really annoying is when you sort of just change horses in midstream. Like, you're in the middle of something and then obviously you do something else.
Josh, don't change horses in midstream.
I know. I thought you'd like that. But then, like, as I kind of get through, I was like, it's kind of fun. Like, I kind of liked it. I didn't hate it. But, you know, it was kind of annoying for that. But if it wasn't for that, you know, like, it was a fun diversion. I wouldn't want it to be here. So how long does this go?
I don't know.
And did they ever finish?
Because Gabe tweeted that he was drawing Hulk, so I assume he's coming back, I guess. I don't know. Like,
he's got one last issue. I don't know.
Oh,
but
man.
He's leaving for a while. He's got his other job.
I might have to bail. Yeah, I might have to bail. Oh, no. So next month is the earth-shattering end of Planet Red Hulk.
Yeah. So. I'm fine. You know, two issues is fine, but in the middle of the storyline, that's not great. But maybe it's, you know, schedule stuff. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
I like Red Hulk. I think it's funny. He used to hate Hulk.
Yeah, I know.
I like Red Hulk. It's not the same as other Hulk. I don't really like Green Hulk that much.
Yeah.
I like that Red Hulk is bemused.
Yeah.
Like, he's a little world weary and he's just like, oh, what now? He's basically Hellboy.
Yeah, it's true. Hellboy with years of military experience.
Yeah.
You know what, Josh? Green Hulk doesn't like you. How about that?
So next review is from the next champion, who reviewed S.H.I.E.L.D. Volume 2, Number 1, and gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And at the time of this review, 7.6% of you made it your pick of the week, number three on the top five pick of the weeks. And he says that, "I'm glad the series is back, but once again, I'm puzzled by the bizarre pacing Hickman has for this book. Yes, it's a shame Dustin Weaver has to work on a bi-monthly schedule, and it's the price to pay for such gorgeous artwork. But with this scheduling, Hickman seems to be moving at a snail's pace. I just don't understand why Hickman couldn't condense this issue along with the first volume of issues. What's here is good. I love the reveal of Michelangelo having a sort of Dr. Manhattan power and reveals of Leonid's childhood. But the stuff involving Newton and Da Vinci fighting each other doesn't interest me as much." I'm sorry, dude. You're completely off. This is awesome. I love this book. And this issue was the perfect bounce back right into it. And we got a taste of Da Vinci. We got a taste of Michelangelo. We got a little bit of everything. And I'm right back into this world. And I trust Hickman 100% on this. So
I was almost not going to buy it, but I did. And I enjoyed it. But I do have a problem with, we had this discussion before, is that it's so dense and it does move slowly. And we can't deny that the schedule makes it difficult to really get into it. It just does. I mean, I like it, but I'd rather read it in one go because there's so much going on and there's a lot to keep track of.
We've seen that with other Hickman, with his Image stuff, particularly.
Yeah.
The Fantastic Four stuff, I'm guessing, you know, if it wasn't moving so fast, it'd be a little harder to hold on to.
But it also comes out monthly.
No, I know. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
It does, so you're okay.
Yeah.
It's
a lot of big ideas, and it's fun, but tough.
So that's your opinions. If you want, you can make your own pull list at ifanboy.com/comics, and you can then write reviews and rate all your books and choose your pick of the week and all that stuff. And if you're one of the lucky few, we'll read it on the show. Next up, emails.
First email is from Neil B, who said, yesterday I emailed a question asking you guys if you thought DC would go full reboot post-Flashpoint, and if you thought it would be a good idea. An hour after I sent my email, I checked the web and found DC had answered the first part of my question through an article in USA Today. So my question still stands. Do you think a reboot is the way to go? Will it revitalize the DCU line and bring it out of the slump you mentioned you felt DC was in creatively? Secondly, while the news carried with it some information on titles and creative teams, who would you like to see handle the reboot of your favorite titles and characters? I was hoping we'd avoid this topic completely.
Do we have time for this?
I don't think we have time for this. Yeah. I will describe my opinion of the DC reboot as anyone who's asked me what I think of it. I said I think that it is insane, awesome, desperate, crazy, ballsy, overdue, horrifying. It's like every emotion, like both ends of the spectrum of both sides. I think it's great that they're challenging and trying to change things. I think it's completely has the potential to be a huge disaster. I'm excited. So,
yeah, I echo your sentiments exactly.
I'm really interested to see what happens. I think that there is a bit of a shame and a loss in that there's a familiarity that we might lose a little bit, but you know, that's a risk that maybe some people should be more willing to take. Like, and I've talked about this with Connor, like the books that you have aren't going anywhere. If you want to go read any of them, you can still do that. You know, it doesn't matter, because that idea of what matters and what doesn't, continuity, it's less important than I think we make it than we give it.
Absolutely less important.
But I'll be fascinated to see what happens. We were talking about this. I think that this is a moment that's going to matter, like business wise, yeah, in how comics are done. I mean, it's certainly a big bold move, but now it's really up to execution.
Well, I think what you're saying is we're either witnessing the changing of the industry or we're witnessing DC cut its throat, and we don't know which one it is yet.
Mm-hmm. And
part of that is also tied to the question that he says, who would you like to see handle the reboot of your favorite titles and characters? We don't have time to get into that, but as they're revealing the creative teams, and Josh, I think we were talking about this offline, I think, at work. They need to make bold moves with the creative teams. And actually, a friend of mine on Twitter was saying, which I give him credit for, he's a comic creator himself. And he said, you know, DC, give Brian K. Vaughan a bag of money and let him do whatever he wants.
This is what I was saying, is that like you
– he doesn't care. He doesn't need a bag of money.
No, I know. But
it's not him. Yeah. But somebody like him, whether it's Neil Gaiman or him or fucking George R. R. Martin, somebody big, they've got to move something. Because when they made their announcements this week, those 10 books, like it was like J.T. Krull, Dan Jurgens. It was just like, oh, it's all those people again.
Yeah.
Well, they don't have the access to the creators that's exciting because they're all Marvel exclusive.
But this is their job. Right. This is their time.
Here's
around the contract.
Here's the thing. Now, I don't know how much credit we can give to it or how much we know what happens behind the scenes. But as far as I know, DC doesn't have a C.B. Sobolski that mm-hmm. Marvel does. Like, I don't know how the ins and outs of creative management and things like that go. But it seems as if DC has failed when it comes to cultivating new talent and getting the exciting ones. That's where Marvel's been edging them out over the past 5 years. Yeah,
we talked about this in the show you guys were on last week.
Yeah, no, I listened to it. I remember.
You know, and that's their problem. And while they have only announced 10 of 50 books, and we haven't heard any of the really big books like that. Batman, Superman.
Yeah.
And you know, the rumors of Grant Morrison, if he's writing a Superman book, that's huge and a great move. And that's rumors of Dwayne Swears writing Batman, and I'm sure Scott Snyder will still be writing a Batman book. And those are all great moves. There's a limit to what they can do because most of the people got tied up with Marvel last year. So
those most of the people who are known comic entities.
I know for years though, you used to complain whenever somebody from outside of comics would come in and write comics. And so now, you know, like
I'm not talking about getting Adrian Brody to do it. I'm saying like they have a relationship with Stephen King. Like I feel like especially in this first blast of books, it would have been really cool to see like just something unexpected. You know, like when you know Damon Lindelof, not him, but something like that.
But the thing is like reality-wise, those guys aren't going to write comics. They're not going to take the pay cut to write comics, so they got to deal with the reality. They got to deal with what they can actually accomplish, which is not getting guys who are going to cut their salary 80% to write Batman. They got to deal with what they got.
Yeah, and what they need to do is they need to find the not Kevin Smith but a Kevin Smith like Simon Pegg, Mm-hmm. Yes. Somebody's going to bring an out of comics name, but with excitement and with the ability to actually write comics and not be late and not blow it to get like, oh shit, you know, like, or bring Brian K. Vaughan back or that, something like that. Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. It's not easy.
Yeah.
But that's their job. But the thing is, all the things that were announced, yes, it's a new rebooted storyline and everything, but they're still the same characters that people didn't buy before by the same people that people didn't buy them from.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Tony Daniel and I'm not bagging on him.
They made some very bizarre and head-scratching choices.
But it's just all their mid-list guys who people weren't excited about.
Yeah.
I agree.
So what's supposed to get people excited? Like,
The collars. The new costumes.
No, I mean, like, I get it. Like Ivan Reis and Jeff Johns, that's a great team to put on a book. Aquaman, that probably wouldn't get checked out otherwise. Cliff Chang on Wonder Woman, that's right. A no-brainer. That's fantastic. Brian Azzarello doing Wonder Woman, that's kind of interesting to me. But it's not Mark Miller. You know, it's not stuff like that.
Wait,
like,
are you going to tell me that the writing team of Gail Simone and Ethan Van Sciver doesn't have you excited?
Man, He really did. He bellied up to the bar and really went for it.
He guilted his way up to that job. Jeez.
Jesus.
Man. Anyway,
it's referring to, it was a thing where Ethan Vizcaiver was on Word Balloon, I think, yeah. And he's like, I'm gonna write. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna make my own thing, and he ends up with a co-writing credit on a Firestorm book.
Yeah. But if we get back to the overall thing, what we think of it, I'm formulating my thoughts. I'm probably gonna write an article for iFanboy about it at some point in the next few months. I might wait for more announcements to come up so we have some more data. But it's exciting, and the thing is, I see people acting like their world is ending, and it's really not. These comics will go on. You have your books that you've already got. They haven't come in and set your collection on fire. If they have, call the police. And
there was a man in a Mets hat and a mustache. What happened?
I was reading comics during Crisis on Infinite Earths. This is not my first time going through a change in the status quo. You will survive. There will be stories you will like. I mean, it's not the end of the world, and they haven't destroyed. I see people complaining they've destroyed 70 years of continuity. They already did it 3 times. This isn't the first time. It's not like the first time they rebooted. This is far from it. It's comics. Enjoy these. None of these stories matter. None of them make sense. They're fiction. None of these characters are real. So
the end result still is that they had to do something.
They had to.
They had to.
Their hold the line didn't change the market share one iota. They had to do something to shake up their place in the industry. They had to do something to save a dying industry. We've been talking for years about how it's a dying industry. They need to do something. They had to make a bold move. Only bold moves do make waves and save things.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and you know, I give them a ton of credit for not resting on their laurels and just keeping paddling in the same direction off the cliff. And that's eventually would have happened.
Yep.
There may have been bumps or anything, but it wasn't going to grow from there. So this is what they're doing. Is it going to work? I have no idea.
That's the exciting part.
It kind of is.
And scary, which is also exciting.
Yes, it is. But, you know, for them.
All right. So if you have any questions, you can shoot us an email, contact@fanboy.com. I'm sure we're going to be talking about this a lot over the next couple of weeks and months, so get used to it. And we're going to skip the voicemails because we're running out of time. But if you have any questions, you can call in and leave us a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
Yes, Don't Miss is the podcast that we are trying desperately to get up every Monday.
It's hard.
Yeah.
This is why we didn't want to do an interview show.
There's stuff going on behind the scenes. Yeah. You don't know is what I'm saying. We're going to try to get something up by Monday. We got one last week. Who knew that was going to happen?
Yeah, that was good.
So there'll be one more. That was
don't
a good
miss
one,
the
by
show
the way.
That comes out most Mondays.
Yeah, I like the irony of that whole thing.
Sometimes Tuesday. Also, we had a special edition iFanboy show about X-Men First Class, the movie. So if you go back on your feed, you'll find it to us talking about the film, which has come out this week. It'll be on the website for streaming, or you can find it on iTunes or any of the places you listen to this show. Just right behind this one, you'll find our X-Men First Class show.
This is a fun one to listen to. It'll be, if you want to hear me gush all over the...
Anytime there's an X-Men movie...
Exactly.
And there's a podcast...
I gotta say, I kind of hope it's awful. That was the first time that I was like, oh, it's good. That's not going to be very much fun. But if it's bad, or if one of us disagree.
Oh, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be good.
I don't want to do G.I. Joe again.
They
kill Havoc off screen.
Wait, Havoc, G.I. Joe?
No, and X-Men.
I know.
Anyway, so so go to ifanboy.com and check out all that and come talk about the X-Men stuff. Hopefully you enjoyed our week of X-Men posts and things like that.
It was the week of X-Men. It quickly became the week of DC.
I tweeted that. I was so angry. It's like DC did this on purpose to ruin my week. This is the X-Men week. Why? Like, DC's just trying to keep the X-Men from getting popular again. It's like, no, it's not fair.
It really was. It was X-Men Monday, X-Men Tuesday, and then it became DC week.
Yeah. So
I'm not complaining.
Yeah. So go to ifanboy.com where you can read all the great posts. I know I personally wrote my ass off this week. So you can check out my ratings of the X-Men line as well as my suggestions for the artist on Uncanny and other great posts. There are other tons of great X-Men content. But we're not just X-Men. We are also Green Lantern in 2 weeks. No, but we are also all comics. So something there for everyone. Trust us. Great stuff to read. Hopefully you've been enjoying it. And we really thank everybody for coming and commenting and participating. It's totally awesome. And we've got other great stuff, other podcasts like Don't Miss and our special editions and John with Word Balloon every week. And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/ifanboy and go to facebook.com/ifanboy to get all the up to the minute updates. And we do have a video show. It's amazing. Every Wednesday. Or around there.
We don't say morning. We just say Wednesday.
Wednesday. Last week, X-Men First Class video came out. Hopefully you enjoyed that. That was a fun episode. And next week, we're looking at the concept of superpowers. So that's a fun one. So check that out on Wednesday.
And as we said earlier, contact@ifanboy.com is our email line. You can write us in to get on the show. And our voicemail line is 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. Call with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics. Leave your name. Tell us where you're from. Leave it about 30, 40 seconds. Don't go much longer than that. We can't put that on the show. It's too long. What do you think we're doing here?
No one wants to listen to you. If you like us. You
are drunk.
Yeah, this is country air. If you like the show, you can write a review for it in iTunes. That's a really good. Well, I at this point, I just want the number to be ridiculous.
It's like 700 something, right?
It's getting pretty close to ridiculous. And I think we know what we're gunning for here. And it's four digits because I think what we can say is, at the very least, we're the most reviewed podcast in comics. I think that should be.
Let's check that out before we make claims like that.
That's how it works. You just make claims and then they become true. Just say
that. That's exactly how it works.
We're the best. It is. It's true now. Or at least people think it's true. It's okay. Most highly rated one.
Perception is most important than reality.
Exactly. So that's iTunes. And that works for any podcast, actually. So if you like other shows, make sure you leave them reviews, too. Like our Don't Most podcast or our video podcast or Word Balloon or see what I'm doing there. But the best thing you can do also is just go and tell people about it if you think that they would enjoy any of the programs we do, even if they wouldn't enjoy every week. But somebody likes Green Lantern, show them a Green Lantern show, that kind of thing. So spread the word, and that's how it gets done. Tweets around.
If everyone who listens to this show tells one person about the show,
double the audience.
Exactly. I totally stole that from another podcast. Not a comics
just
podcast, but
tell one person.
Just tell one person. That's it. So
even if it's your mom, but she has to listen.
Yes. Make her listen. So, anyway.
Also send me a dollar.
$1. One American dollar.
Suburban Tragedy has son a cost mother to listen to podcasts.
Wow, he is drunk.
I gotcha.
It was the headline. Where'd you get? It's like you had that written. Suburban Tragedy.
Tragedy in the suburbs is. All right, so on that note, until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm an aging hipster.